Okay, meeting will come to order here. Governmental Operations and Veterans Affairs today on February 23rd. We do have a quorum with the members that checked in and will return shortly. And first item is approval of the minutes. Representative Neil Peterson.
Chair, I'll move approval.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. He moves approval of the minutes of the February 22nd meeting. Any discussion? All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Thank you. Okay. Members, we have three bills up today. First one up is Representative Bruce Anderson's House File 171. And his second author here is Representative Wardlow. Would you like to move the bill, please?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move House File number 171, recommended to pass, and move on to transportation policy.
Thank you, Representative Wardlow. And I understand there's an A1 amendment that the author would like to put it in the shape that he prefers. Representative Wardlow, would you like to move that amendment?
Madam Chair, I'll move the amendment 0171A1.
Thank you, Representative Wardlow. Any discussion on A1 amendment to put the bill in the shape the author would prefer? All in favor of the A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. An amendment is adopted. Okay, the bill is now before us as amended. Representative Bruce Anderson, welcome to the committee. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, House File 171 comes to you as a recommendation from veterans who have served already in Iraq, Afghanistan, and members also who have served in the Gulf War on terrorism capacity throughout the states and across the ocean. We are here today because these gentlemen, and I'll mention their names, Adam Timperley, Mr. Herrick, and Mr. Angst, are all veterans, are all some of them are still in the military as reservists, National Guardsmen, and they're here to testify on behalf of the bill. I have before me, given to me by the Department of Public Safety, a general plate, what it looks like. What will happen is if members of the military make qualification, they'll receive a detail like this that will be put on the side, and then on the bottom of there will be a another detail that says Gulf War vet or the Gulf War on Terrorism, Afghan vet, or a Iraqi vet situation. And the decal is pretty easy, simply just like putting on your regular decal in the lower right-hand corner to designate the year your car is in capacity for like 405 or 06, whatever the case might be. Again, members, the reason the bill is before us is because of these gentlemen here who contacted my office back in the summer of 04, asking that their company, their brothers and sisters in the military, as we call ourselves, that they might be recognized for their duty serving our country in the overseas Southwest Asia. And the bill itself basically brings forward the request for the decal, and the cost of it is, as with all special plates, I've got the Department of Public Safety here, the costs for any special plate would be $10 on top of that, and that's not just for this plate, but for any plate, and it would be specifically for members serving in this theater. And I don't want to go and belabor this issue. I know you've got other things to do, but I'd like to have the members that have come forward serving our military from Minnesota to testify on behalf of the bill. From Madam Chair, if that's possible, I'd just like to have them recognize themselves and give their testimony on why they would like the bill.
Thank you, Representative Anderson, for bringing this bill to us, and thank you, gentlemen, for your service to our country. We appreciate it. So I don't know if you want to just individually have them go through and identify themselves. Welcome to the committee, and we need identification for our records. Thank you.
Hello, ma'am. My name is John Herrick. I'm a staff sergeant in the Air Force Reserve. I've been in 10 years and plan to do another 10. I served in Operation Iraqi Freedom from November of 03 to March of 2004 in the country of Qatar, and therefore I think I would, having done that, I've qualified for the Global War on Terrorism Expeditionary Medal, and I believe that every time I see a Vietnam veteran plate or a Gulf War vet plate, it's important that we're recognized just as well for our service. So I appreciate the opportunity to be here today and having you hear this as well.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'd like to say it's an honor to be here today, and I express a deep thanks from all of our soldiers for allowing this bill to be heard today. I'd like to give you a little background about why...
Sir, if you could just identify yourself for the record, we need your name.
Specialist Adam Timperley.
Thank you.
I'd like to go into a little background as to why myself and some of my fellow soldiers approached Representative Anderson about this bill. After serving 4 months in Iraq and being wounded, I was sent home. Fortunate enough that I still have all my limbs, but I was able to go back to my work and talk to some of my fellow co-workers who had been overseas and served in Iraq. And one of them asked me, did you get your license plate yet? And I said, I was kind of curious. I said, no, what plate are they issuing for this war? And he said, he told me, yeah, I got Persian Gulf War. And I said, that doesn't make any sense. You're not a Persian Gulf War veteran, you know. To me, it was kind of akin of a Vietnam veteran coming home and receiving a Korean War vet plate. Oh. Or something like that. So his mishap kind of inspired me to come together with my fellow soldiers to bring this to Representative Anderson's attention. We were also very fortunate in that my unit is still currently serving in Iraq, and we were able to communicate through email and send them some of the things we were working on and the designs that we were thinking of, and they were able to put together a vote and let us know how they felt. They thought the license plate would look best. So this has truly come from all soldiers and all the way from the front lines of Iraq. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Madam Chairman, my name is Dan Hingst. I'm a captain in the United States Army Reserve, and I recently returned in April of last year from a year-long deployment in Iraq. I deployed with a unit from Indiana as their company commander, although I currently am a member of a unit here in Arden Hills, Minnesota. Some of the things that make this bill important, or why I feel it's important and why I'm here. I'm also a Gulf War vet, and I do have that license plate from the state of Minnesota proudly displayed on my vehicle currently. And I will probably purchase this one if it's approved and have it displayed on my other vehicle. It's just one of the things that that I would probably do. The reason I think it's important, though, is there is a sense of pride when you have something like that. There's a pride that every soldier, airman, marine, or sailor has when they put on the uniform. And knowing that they responded when their country called is significant. And to be able to have that remembrance and recognition, you know, on into prosperity on their vehicle. It's just one thing when you drive down the road and you see a Vietnam veteran or a Korean veteran or a World War II veteran's license plate or at a parade, it just sort of sends the hair on the back of your neck, you know, kind of stands up. And I appreciate you hearing this bill, and your support and hopefully approval will be greatly appreciated by a large number of servicemen and women throughout the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. I appreciate your testimony. Representative Anderson, did you have further comments before we move to questions?
Madam Chair, I don't have further comments or questions, just the fact that, as we've mentioned on the House floor, the three members of the unit from Montevideo that lost their lives just the last few days. It's very tough to be able to realize that, but these people, individuals, went out of their way to give of themselves. So I appreciate you hearing the bill, and I hope that if there are some concerns about this, that questions will be brought forward, and we're open for questions right now, too.
Representative Anderson, we truly appreciate your efforts, and we did have a moment of silence yesterday in the committee here as well as on the House floor, so our condolences to those families. Questions from committee members? I know, do you have one other person that was going to testify here?
Madam Chair, the individuals from DPS, talked to them, and they've said that unless there's questions for them, they just soon let the questionnaire, the testimony that's been given here stand, but they're more than glad to come and answer any questions that you might have of DPS in regards to the making and the decals and providing the general plates for the public. So they'll stand for questions and or answer any questions if they have any.
Thank you. And Representative Anderson, I know you have a couple different handouts that were in the packet. Maybe if you could just highlight these for us, information for members.
Well, Madam Chair, the pictures that that you have, I hope that you've got pictures of the individuals in there. I'm not sure. I see in the middle, on the bottom of the photograph, the collage of pictures, is Specialist Adam Timperley as he's laying on a cot with a dressing, wound dressing on his left leg. And that is fortunate when people say, or you hear in news media that we want up-armored Humvees over there. Our unit out of Monticello was deployed with 16 up-armored Humvees, but once you move from a National Guard status or a reserve status into an active duty status, you now become a part of the active duty command, and they have jurisdiction over your equipment. So a lot of their equipment that they had was utilized for the mission that was before them, and so the 16 that they had all of a sudden got compromised, not for the worst of anything, but it was used because they, as active duty units, battalions, or whatever the situation might be, got used. And had not Specialist Kipperly had an up-armored Humvee at that time, he might not be with us today. And so these are very critical things, but these are a collage of individuals, members of the unit, that are over there, and quite a few of the members are from my area, Waverly and Monticello, and people that have come from different parts of the state that drill at the Monticello unit. So that's the collage there of individuals from the unit there. We also have a picture of the license plate, and then this is kind of this is the actual, but it's a collage of for the Iraq war vet and the Afghan war vet. Basically, the medal will look the same with the decal defining what they are as far as veteran, and the bottom one, the Gulf War on Terrorism vet service, will also include members who my unit at Fort Snelling had members who went into service as MPs, even though that their AOS did not have them as a military police. They went to serve across the states and across the world in a military police fashion, and so some of them didn't meet the 180-day requirement, but we're making an exception for them because 179 days, and then all of a sudden you miss it by one day. So we're asking that we, in our bill, to at least recognize them for their effort in giving themselves as military police and guarding our bases and keeping them safe because of the 911 disaster. And so that is the kind of what's neat about the bill is the fact that we can use a generic plate that anybody can use, and we're just applying the decals to them so that the recognition can be given to the proper individuals who served, whether male or female, in the war in Afghan. And we just as Specialist Temple, he says he still has members over in Iraq. We at the 133rd Airlift Wing, the Air National Guard, have members still in Iraq, and I think when they come home, to have this available to them would be a great honor. Thank you.
Members, questions from members. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Anderson. I had a question. You know, we live in a world of acronyms, and I have to say the GWOT was a new one to me, and I'm wondering if for something that you're expecting to be out on the public and recognized and appreciated, if maybe Gulf War Vet might be a more understood term, because I quite honestly had to think a minute on that one as we came in here, and I don't know if it's in common usage outside of the military.
Madam Chair,
Representative
Loeffler, that I guess this is just to give an idea of what we'd like to see. DPS would be willing to take ideas and expand on them if it's possible to work. We don't want to get too lengthy in trying to get that definition down there, but if we could put Gulf War on Terrorism, Gulf War, some way to recognize where they're from, with the help of a designer, DPS is willing to work with us to make a difference. So if that's a recommendation, we can bring that forward
to the designer and then to sponsor DPS to have that. So if that's a concern, I'd be glad to share it with the people at DPS.
Thank you. Further questions? Representative Severson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and not so much a question, but just a statement of thanks to these young men and who have taken the time to serve their country. And I think this is a tremendous opportunity for us to recognize, and so that they can recognize those that have served with them. But I also, just a word of encouragement that you have taken the time to serve your country and you've taken time out of your lives to do that. You have a very unique perspective in terms of freedom and what the cost of freedom is. You've been to a third world country where they don't have that. And so I just encourage you, you have served your country, but you continue to serve your country as you're back here. And fighting for those freedoms doesn't stop when you get out of the military or any of those perspectives, because that freedom is essential for you, for your kids, and for your grandkids. And I just encourage you that be a voice for that freedom, not just in the military, but once you get out, because the values that you have learned and carried on with your fellow soldiers in the military are those things that we need in this society. Thank you for your service.
Thank you. Further questions, comments from members? Representative Kahn.
Yes, Madam Chairman, I'm sorry I came a little bit late. What are the fiscal impacts of this? Is this supposed to raise some money for programs, or is it just for the...
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kahn, in talking with DPS, the cost of this here, the first year would be about $7,000, but with the fee that is charged to individuals who have a special plate, the $10 that once we get past that first year, the cost implications will be diminished substantially, and that the next years after that we should basically break even. In fact, it's possible that we could even have a little extra money, 50 cents or so coming into the state as kind of a profit. But that's part of the fee already for whatever special plate or decal that we put on, the $10 is there. And
okay, I just wanted to...
Representative Kahn.
Sure, Madam Chairman, this is not then to fund any special programs. This is just for the recognition for people on the detail.
Madam Chair, Representative Kahn, yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Thank you. Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank you as well for your service, and since everybody else who's ever been in a war gets a license plate, I don't see why you folks shouldn't have one also. And I only regret I don't qualify for that plate, but maybe they'll take me anyway. I don't know.
Is there anybody from the audience who would like to testify for or against this bill? Please. If you could keep your comments brief, we do need to have you identify yourself for the record. If you want to...
Yeah, my name is...
you need to get up to the microphone. Excuse me.
My name is Mark Frost, and I'm also a member of the Brotherhood, so it's good to see some of my brothers here. Tomorrow at the Moose Lodge on English Street, the United Veterans Council will be honoring these people, and we're going to be giving you the parameters for Camp Iron Dragon and the IDR, which responds to some concerns that were brought to us at a meeting of the Brotherhood up at AMVET Post 1, 6690 in Mendota on Sunday when we had to say goodbye to one of our brothers. That's all I got to say. And I'm going to buy some of these things.
Thank you, Mr. Trost. Is there anybody else from the audience? Okay. Please come up to the mic and identify yourself for the record, please.
My name is Bob Timperley, and it would be foolish of me to try to hide the fact that my son sits two down from me here. And obviously I'm extremely proud of him. Ordinarily in a public setting, I have a few incidents and conversations with Adam that I like to put forward to demonstrate his character. I'm not going to do that. But what I do want to do is just give you one incident that that will, I hope, instill or bring forward the character of the people that, as Minnesotans, represent us in these services overseas. Adam and I had the opportunity to sit with one of his fellow soldiers who was back on leave. These two young men were sitting on the couch, and of course, a curious father as I was, I said, you know, what do you guys do? Adam had been wounded at the time. I said, what do you guys do when you get fired up? Don't you just shoot back right away? They both said no. I said, why? You guys are in harm's way. You're going to get hurt. These two young men looked at me and they said, we don't shoot back until we're sure we're shooting at the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
These young men that we put over there, put the integrity and the character of this country on the top shelf. We have top shelf people over there, and they deserve this recognition. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Timberley. Appreciate that. Okay, Representative Anderson, would you like final comment here before we vote on the bill?
I just appreciate your attention and pray that you would consider this as a worthy bill to go forward and that it would bring great honor and respect to those who have fought for our country. And thank you for listening to us.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Staff Sergeant Herrick, Specialist Timberley, Captain Heinz, thank you for your service and your testimony today. With that, Representative Wardlow renews his motion that House File 171, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Transportation Policy Committee. Any discussion? All in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's unanimous. Thank you. The bill is passed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you. As we make the transition here, members, we're going to be switching the agenda. Representative Seifert's bill will go next, and we'll do Representative Demmer's bill right after that, just for kind of a timing issue here with the testifier. So next up is Representative Seifert's bill, House File 1036. Representative Seifert.
Madam Chair, I move that House File 1036 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register.
Thank you, Representative Seifert. And you have an amendment?
Yep, Madam Chair, members, in your packet you'll find the A1 amendment. It is a technical amendment that just clarifies on page 4, line 23, when we are speaking about the Chief Administrative Law Judge being able to assess costs in the conduct of hearings, that apparently that's self-explanatory, and it's just a technical amendment, really.
Okay, Representative Seifert moves the H1036A1 amendment. Any discussion? Put the bill in the order that he would prefer. All in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, this is the housekeeping bill for the Office of Administrative Hearings. It has just a couple small changes to the law, but they are important for the Office of Administrative Hearings to be able to better conduct their business. And I have with me Bruce Johnson, who is Assistant Chief ALJ, and he will walk through those changes with us on the housekeeping bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bruce Johnson. I'm Assistant Chief Administrative Law Judge. I did want to convey Chief Judge Krause's apologies for not being here, but he's conducting a hearing. And as Representative Seifert indicated, most of what is in the bill is technical. There are a couple of things that touch on policy, but I hope they're not going to be very controversial. Section 1 of the bill directs the revisor's office to distribute 3 copies of Minnesota rules to our office. Prior to 1996, the Attorney General's office was responsible for rule review and rule oversight, and they were allocated 25 copies for that function. In 96, that function was transferred to our office, and we didn't get copies of the rules. We don't need 25 copies. 3 would do just fine. In fact, I don't think we have room for 25 copies, but we're just asking that whenever there's a revision of the rules that we be, that 3 copies be distributed to our office. This, section 2 of the bill is somewhat technical. Mr. Shepard and I talked about this. Section 14.50 requires administrative law judges in hearings to prepare, it specifically requires them to make findings of fact, conclusions of law, and recommendations to agencies. And then there's another provision that indicates that the ALJs take notice of the degree to which the agency has fulfilled all substantive and procedural requirements of law or rule. What that was is intended to establish is that a case is properly before an administrative law judge, which is a procedural matter. And frankly, it was confusing to some attorneys that in talking about substance, that goes to the merits of the case, which is covered by a prior part of the statute. And to avoid that confusion, we are just suggesting that the word substantive and be deleted. Section 3 of the bill gives the Chief Administrative Law Judge rulemaking authority to govern the, the current law, Section 14.51, gives the Chief Administrative Law Judge authority to adopt rules to govern the procedural conduct of all hearings, rule hearings, contested case hearings, and workers' compensation hearings. The problem is contested case has a defined legal meaning. That is a hearing that actually arises under Chapter 14. Within the last 4 or 5 years, the legislature has given us jurisdiction of cases hearings that do not occur under Chapter 14. Examples are municipal boundary disputes, complaints against the Secretary of State under the Help America Vote Act, and most recently, violations of the Fair Campaign Practices Act. Rather than tinkering with each piece of legislation, this simply allows the Chief Administrative Law Judge to adopt procedural rules pertaining to any hearing that comes before our office. We're not necessarily intending to do that, but should the occasion arise, it would eliminate the need to go back and change every single statute. Section 4 of the bill provides that in consultation with the Commissioner of Administration, the Chief Administrative Law Judge shall assess agencies the cost of services. Well, that is artifact from a long time ago, before the Department of Finance was actually established. Now, who we're supposed to go to have our rates approved are the Commissioner of Finance, not the Commissioner of Administration. And it's just getting bringing the bill up to date. The amendment goes to that, too, and as Representative Seifert indicated, the current language says that we should assess costs of all hearings. But as Mr. Shepard pointed out to me, in rulemaking proceedings, there aren't always rule hearings, and we wanted to make sure that we could assess costs of other services. Section 5 of the bill, actually this arises because of a change that happened in 2002. At that time, agencies were taking sometimes a year and a half to make final decisions, and the legislature enacted an amendment to Chapter 14 that required the agency to act within 90 days after the record closed. And the consequence of that was that if they did not, the ALJ's report would become the final decision. Well, in dealing with professional licensing boards, such as the Board of Medical Practice, we commonly make findings of fact and conclusions of law, but we have, as a matter of practice and policy, haven't made a recommendation about what to do about it. In other words, we have not believed it was in our role to say when a doctor can get his license back, what a doctor might have to do to get his license back. That's the disciplinary matters were better handled by the board. Well, now, if the board doesn't act, there's nothing in the administrative law judge's report that pertains to discipline. And so this simply requires the board or agency to refer the matter back to us for consideration of what disciplinary measure to impose. And then finally, the last section of the act is in my mind, the most important. Chapter 14, which governs administrative hearings, first of all, requires all hearings to be public. But there's also a provision in Chapter 14 that allows administrative law judges to close the hearing while not public information is being discussed, to enter protective orders, to do other things to prevent the public release of information that's not public under the Data Practices Act. There is no corresponding provision in Chapter 176 for workers' compensation hearings. And frequently, such very sensitive matters such as mental health data and other things come up in these hearings, and basically we're just asking for a parallel provision that would allow compensation judges to take appropriate steps to prevent the release of not public information in workers' compensation hearing. And that, Madam Chair, is the bill. I'm certainly willing to ask any question that the members may have.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Question from members? Representative Waffa.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And Judge, the question I had was on Section 4 about being able to charge back services to state agencies. And I'm wondering whether you think that's going to be a substantive charge. I mean, will any consultation with your office and the development of rules be something that they'll be charged for, like going to a local lawyer? Or how do you envision implementing that?
Madam Chair, Representative Lawford, we charge them now, basically. And what we charge them an hourly rate for the time we actually spend on the matters they refer to us. We have been charging them for rule review. But as Mr. Shepard pointed out to me, you know, maybe one could argue that we shouldn't be doing that. And so the change is just simply meant to do that. The other provision, part of that provision is, it adds the phrase, except as otherwise provided by statute. And, for example, in municipal boundary disputes, we are obliged to actually charge the parties. In other words, whether it's a municipality or a landowner, that's in Chapter 414. So that just recognizes that not in every case do we charge the agency. If the statute provides otherwise, then we go with that. Does that answer your question, Representative Loeffler?
Follow-up, Representative Loeffler.
It sounds like this is pretty much codifying current practice. You don't expect this to be a major change in interagency billing.
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler, no, we don't expect it to be a change at all. We've been doing this for 25 years, and nobody has called us on it, I guess.
Thank you. Other questions? Is there anybody from the audience that would like to testify for or against this bill?
Madam Chair, I'll renew my motion that House Bill 1036 be recommended to pass and be placed in the General Register.
Thank you, Representative Cipher. Any discussion? All in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the bill is recommended to pass as amended, and will go to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Cipher and Judge Johnson. Next up is Representative Demers' bill, House File 973. I think this was the one that was on the agenda yesterday, and we ran out of time, right? And Representative Demmer, when you're ready there, if you'd like to move your bill, and Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this is House File 973. This is the Department of Employee Relations, the housekeeping bill, the annual bill, the Doer bill, a continuation of yesterday's Doer Day, if you will.
Excuse me, Representative Demmer, if we could officially get the bill before the committee. Representative Demmer moves that House File 973 be recommended pass and go to the General Register. Representative Demmer.
That's correct, Madam Chair. Thank you. Again, this is House File 973 is the Doer housekeeping bill. Make some changes that are non-monetary. There are four general areas, Madam Chair. I'll just take the bill itself and we'll walk through the proposed changes. In Section 1, Madam Chair, Section 43A08, what that does in that area, it identifies which agencies can appoint unclassified positions. And members, what we'd like to do, or what the agency is proposing, is to add two agencies, Explore Minnesota Tourism and the IRRRB, as hiring authorities underneath the statute. Explore Minnesota Tourism had this authority when they were part of DEED, or the Department of Employment and Economic Development, in the past. They are now on their own and need to be listed here. And the IRRRB also has been elevated to a cabinet-level type position and needs the authorization. The second thing that we'd like to do, or that the department is proposing, is the unclassified people right now report directly to either an agency head or a deputy agency head. I'd like to expand that so they can also report to an assistant agency head. So that is the next part. Next, members, I guess on page 3, in the hiring process, there are a couple of technical changes that we'd like to talk about. One of them involves changes to how, or the, okay, so we'll go in order here. In good standing is referred to here when the agency goes out to hire people that have previously been with the department, have left, and now are going to come back again. They were referred to as being in good standing to be eligible, and that term doesn't have any meaning any longer. It was taken out in the past, so we're just taking out the words in good standing. It doesn't really change the substance. And the other thing it allows the agency to do is to go out and search the employee database for people that were there. Search the database for potential employees instead of using what was called an eligible list, which again is terminology that's not current any longer. So those are the two areas in the terms of the hiring process, more technical type proposals. Moving on to the last page of the bill, and these are two different proposals relating to CGIP, or the State Employee Group Insurance Program membership. The first deals with Minnesota Humanities Commission. They no longer have an appropriation from the state government, and therefore employees of that commission would no longer be eligible for CGIP membership. If and when they do get an appropriation from the state again of some sort, of some substantial amount that makes it that are part of the agency, the department very definitely would like to have them back again. But for right now, because they don't get an appropriation from the state, it's not appropriate that they are members of the association. And last, the department would like to clarify that state employees can receive information about their benefits electronically, if you will, through email. For members that have been here in their second term or longer, there was a change in the notification that we had, and I think this goes for all state employees. We received a lot of it by email electronically and not so much of a big packet, and they would like the authority to do that. Due consideration being given, I think, from the department for those who do not have internet access, they'd be able to get packets of information yet on paper. So, Madam Chair, I guess that in general summarizes the bill. I would be, people from here from the department would be open to questions.
Thank you, Representative Demmer. And actually, before we go to questions, I'd like to introduce the school group that just joined us here. These are students from the First Baptist School of Rosemont. So let's welcome them. And currently we have Representative Demmer's bill. It's House File 973 relating to state employment provisions. Questions from members? Representative Conn was first on the list.
Yes. Madam Chairman, Representative Demmer. Was the Humanities Commission, have they been notified this, or what do they have to say about that?
Representative Demmer.
Madam Chair, Representative Conn, I'm going to defer to members of the department to talk about that. My understanding is that this is a predetermined and prearranged agreement, and there's an understanding between the members of the commission and the department. I'll let them speak to that.
Welcome to the committee, and if you could identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, representatives of the committee, I'm Liz Holding, manager of the Employee Insurance Division at Doer, and I'm glad to be back here again today. Representative Conn, yes, this was an agreement we reached with the Humanities Commission a year ago when they were seeking to get funding because they had not done so in the previous budget period so that they could remain in the program. And we said that, and they were unable to do so during the last legislative session because it was a non-budget session. So we agreed to continue to have them in our program pending this year's budget hearings and the outcome of those hearings, and they are in agreement that if at such time they do get substantial funding from the state, they'll be part of the program, and if not, they won't be.
Follow up, Representative Conn.
Yes. When I look at some of these groups that are listed here, I'm not entirely sure that these groups get substantial funding from the state. And I know this is a federal question that you, I know because I was I was involved in helping fix pension plans, I think, for example, when the University of Minnesota's hospital was changed to Fairview. So I know it's often, you know, how many employees are there and where are they getting their, insurance from? And how much, and are all of these have a substantial appropriation from the state, like the Sibley House Association, the Minnesota International Center, and so forth?
Ms. Holden.
Madam Chair, Representative Kahn, yes, there are some of these, what we call independent billing groups, who do not get state funding, but we have been working with the Attorney General's office to help us identify who those groups are and are not prepared at this time to do anything to remove them from the group, but you may see us back again next year doing so.
Follow up, Representative Kahn.
I'm kind of reluctant to pass the bill with this in it without hearing from the staff of the Minnesota Humanities Commission, and I'm also think it's a general, if it's a general problem, we ought to solve it all at once instead of doing it one at a time. And no, I don't. So I'd actually like to strike. I guess it would be strike section 4. And I, you know, I understand if we're required to do this on the federal rule, but I'd like to make sure that everything has been done, you know, unless there's no interest in the employees of this group in staying in the state group, which I find hard to believe. But, for example, is there anything short of giving a state appropriation that would retain the state connection? And then the next question is, why don't we deal with this issue all at once instead of one organization at a time?
Okay, let's get this on the record officially. Representative Kahn makes an amendment to strike Section 4, which is on page 3 and 4. And to answer your two questions, Ms. Holding.
Madam Chair, Representative Kahn, there's another issue in terms of this. It's not only the funding, but our lawyers have advised us that these entities that are part of the program, the independent billing units, must also be under the control of the state. And in this particular instance, the Minnesota Humanities Commission is not. And that's why we're working with the other groups to see if they qualify for that status as well.
Yes, I understand that, and I do understand that we have to do it legal, but I just suggest that we do it all at once instead of one organization at a time. That I really do think that we ought to have one set of criteria for these things that we used to call semi-state organizations, I know, and that we, I don't believe that the state controls the American Legion. I don't believe that they control the disabled American veterans and so forth. And, you know, I don't know what the criteria are, and I don't know what the differences are, but I'd rather know before we just pass this, striking one of them.
Representative Demmer, if you'd like to comment then.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Penn, I'm not in disagreement with you on that. I think they should all be looked at.
Yeah.
However, to not do one that we know needs to be done because we're afraid there might be some others in there doesn't make sense to me. I guess my suggestion, Madam Chair and members, is that we go ahead and do this. We count on the departments to do this to keep us legal and do what they're supposed to do. That's what they're doing here. I'm not opposed to asking them to go through and make sure there aren't others that fall in this category and should be removed. But to not remove one we are advised are supposed to remove because we think there might be others, I don't think makes sense. And so I think we should not pass the amendment. Go ahead and remove them, and then maybe ask the department to come back and look at this as a whole and maybe craft language so we don't have to deal with it one-on-one.
Well, let me phrase it in a different way. I think we have it. First of all, we're not here to just rubber stamp what a department asks us to do. We're here to use our best judgment as legislators. And I have a great interest in treating all groups equally, and I really think we should treat all groups equally. And the idea of doing one at a time, I just find is, I just don't think that's the way we ought to do things. If there is a state problem, we ought to deal with it, and we ought to deal with the whole thing. We ought not to deal with it just one agency that's been picked out of this group. Because, you know, I think if it does apply to all of these others, there may be some interest in finding a general solution to it. And when you pick something off one at a time, you never get that interest in doing a general solution. So I guess, you know, I don't think this really harms your bill, and I think that really we ought to just, in the interest of equity, deal with the whole problem instead of one part of it at a time. I feel more comfortable if the people from the Humanities Commission were here saying that, you know, they've made other arrangements and they don't have any problems with this, but they're not here at the time. And I don't know if you'd rather lay the bill over until I get here or what. We can take this off and put it back later, mm-hmm. if that's a...
Representative Conn, it looks like the bill was introduced February 10th, so it has been out on the Internet, and I'm sure they are aware of it. Members, I have several of you on the list. I'd like to address the amendment first. I'm not sure if some of you were to the bill or to the amendment. First was Representative Sheldon Johnson. Is it to the amendment?
The bill, so
okay, we'll come back to you. Representative Severson, to the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a point of order, I know we set the rules in the committee, and those rules are kind of set to be guidelines. But I think oftentimes when we continue to get the nose under the tent here, we continue to get aberrations to that rule, the 24-hour rule. This has been out and advertised for a considerable amount of time, and I believe that Representative Conn has had the ability to review this previously and put together an amendment that would address this situation for us to do the pen and ink. Often compromises our ability to do good legislative work through the committee with getting bills that, you know, aren't really thought through and come across with something that we did not intend to do. So I would just encourage, Madam Chair, the consideration of the 24-hour rule, and if there is an amendment that meets that criteria.
Next up was Representative Mahoney to the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
And I'm going to speak in favor of Representative Conn's amendment. This is not a substantial amendment. Your amendment, your rule might... you're the chair, you can enforce it at your discretion, I guess is the best word. But as I look at this, you know, and I suspect there's a number of committee members that sit on finance divisions that anywhere from the State Agricultural Society to the Office of Military Order of the Purple Heart sit on that would come through, and I see a couple that would come through the finance division that I've sat on for the last 5 years, and we've never put out a dollar for any of these, and I know that in that division we put out money for the Humanities Commission. I think a couple years ago, I understand and have followed how that got taken out a couple years ago. But there's others here in the same vein that Representative Conn is talking about, that we should really know about the whole thing rather than the piecemeal part of this, and so I support Representative Conn. We should just send this back, and you should come to us. You know, there's still time left. I don't think the deadlines are until April 1st, so you've got at least a month or two to kind of find this out. Lawyers shouldn't take that long to get back to you, and you could certainly go through any budget that we've done in the last couple of years. I suspect it's online and out there for people to search and see. And come back to us, and then bring these people along with to find out what they've done or how they've been contacted and been part of. I really am hesitant to cut anybody off without hearing from the other side.
Okay, we still have several members on the list here to the amendment. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm not sure. I think my question is for Mrs. Holden, is it? You made reference that you have been, I thought you actually made reference that you've been in contact with the Minnesota Humanities Commission, and this was an agreement that you've reached because they no longer get fees, and they have made arrangements, I'm assuming, if they've been in contact with you. And are they the only group here that you've been able to reconcile this at this point?
Ms. Foley.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, yes, this is the only group that we have been in contact with and talked to them about eliminating them from the program if they don't receive state funding. We have not done that with any other groups. And it was agreed upon a year ago when they sought funding that we would continue them in the program until such time as this legislative session determined whether or not they were entitled to any state funding. And that's the only group.
Madam Chair, to that point?
Yep, and then we have a follow-up from McMahon. Representative Mahoney, to that point.
My question is, can you explain to us why you haven't been in contact with any of the other groups?
Ms. Holding?
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, as I indicated, we are in the process of working with the Attorney General's office to get their opinion as to which other groups would qualify to participate and which other groups wouldn't qualify because of funding or control, state control of that particular group. And we are not prepared at this time to move any further groups forward.
I'll defer to Representative Mahoney.
Is there something wrong that you can't push a button on the telephone and say, do you get any money from the state? Is there a reason you just can't make that phone call?
Sure, it's a little more involved than that. Ms. Holding.
Madam Chair, Representative. Yes, it is more involved. As I said, it's not only the funding, but it is the control that the state has, and we have to, and that's why we're working with the Attorney General's office. They are looking at the statutes to see what kind of control there is over these individual groups to see if they do qualify for our program or not.
I'll follow up, Representative McMahon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mrs. Holden, so have you had, let me ask this, do you know, does the Minnesota Heart Society, have they gotten any money from the state in the last biennium?
Ms. Holden.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, I do not know.
Representative McNamara.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. So do you know on this list, because you're trying to get an interpretation from the Attorney General of how he's interpreting whether they've, how often the funding's been and whatever. Would that be true? You're waiting for that opinion. Do you have any idea when that's forthcoming?
Ms. Holding.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, we are waiting for the Attorney General to evaluate not only whether or not there's state funding for each of these entities, but the amount of control that the state has over these groups. And I would hope that in the not-too-distant future we would have this information.
Representative McMahon.
This is kind of a procedural one, Madam Chair. So if we pass this on to the floor, I believe it's going on the general register.
That's correct.
And then if we were to find out, again, an opinion from the Attorney General that two of these groups should be treated like the Humanities Commission, and you were able to negotiate with them to understand, I'd imagine the Humanities Commission has had an opportunity 1 year to make these other plans. My concern would be if we got an opinion, maybe these other groups would need some time to work that out. But if they did get it worked out, Representative Demmert could bring an amendment on the floor, couldn't he, Madam
That's
Chair,
correct.
That would straighten this out. I mean, if you've reached an agreement with one group, I don't know that we want to stop and say, well, because you haven't gotten it done. I would strongly recommend that you do follow up and see about these other ones. I don't know that we want to be breaking the law, but maybe this would get the Attorney General to get a good look at it and move it forward, because I think we would want to keep some consistency and put some pressure on it, but I think we do need to keep moving forward. So I guess I would propose that I would be voting against the amendment to keep it moving forward, Madam.
Thank you, Representative Demmer.
Madam Chair, in listening to the conversation, and again, I don't use the terms of Representative Beer from yesterday, I don't have a big dog in this fight, but just trying to analyze it as we all are, I think we have parameters that are relatively, I don't know how straightforward and objective they are in terms of whether they're in or whether they're out. Yeah. If it was as simple as they get a dollar or they don't, like Representative Mahoney said, we just make a phone call and we'd know. I think it sounds like there's more involved in that when they're talking about control and different things. And if we get the Attorney General's office involved, the department sounds like they've been working on this for a year and waiting for opinions. We still have to move forward. When we know something is has to be done, we should do it. And not wait for years on end for everything totally to get done. That'd be nice in a perfect setting. Regarding the Minnesota Humanities Commission, this bill, as you mentioned, Madam Chair, has been out for quite some time. It was really up for hearing yesterday, and it was delayed till today. I have heard nothing from the Minnesota Humanities Commission. They've not contacted me at all. I don't think it's a question of us having to go out and contact anybody that ever might happen to be affected by something and see if they want to say anything. They have due diligence, too. They were here yesterday. They didn't talk to me. They didn't come in and testify. I think the department's done their work here, and I think we need to defeat the amendment and move on, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Khan.
Well, you know, I don't think this is a simple little issue. I think people's insurance is very, very important to them. And I don't think, and I don't see any, first of all, there is a, you know, it is a may elect coverage for themselves or their dependents at their own fit. The other persons, if not otherwise, covered by a may elect coverage. So it's not, you know, it's not exactly that some crisis is going to come if we take this section off. I mean, I usually try to have a little pride in doing something. When you do something, try not, you know, follow the doctor's directives, do no harm. I see that this can do harm, not necessarily to the people in that, but just if we go ahead and do that, then we'll go ahead and do the next one for the same reason. And I actually think that this is an issue that should have a little bit more attention. This is the Government Operations Committee. It shouldn't be done on the floor of the House. It should have another attention as to what the employees are under all of these groups. Do they have other accesses for, you know, for insurance? And what does this level of control mean? I can tell you right now that state government does not control, in the sense of the word that you think control, many of these organizations. I don't know what level of appropriation it is. I just don't think that this is a matter that ought to be just done in what's being called a housekeeping bill. Now, I've made my amendment. If you feel comfortable doing it, it's your bill, and if people on the committee feel comfortable passing it along. But, you know, as has been pointed out, the session is early. It wouldn't be any problem to draw up another bill or even to put this into one of the omnibus appropriations bill that would deal with this matter, which I don't think is an insignificant matter. If you think it is insignificant, just try and draw a line through the whole rest of these and see how insignificant it is. And you know, so I just think in the interest of good legislation and the interest of trying to think things out, that it would be a good idea to remove this section at this time and to come in with another bill that would deal with it and that would have all of these groups in to testify to see what their interest is in being in and out and what they think they and what the federal issue, it's a federal tax issue, I think I understand, or a federal regulatory issue, how it applies to them, and is that something that we want to just go along with or that we want to contest. And, you know, I've just made my pitch. I think it's a simple amendment. Representative Stevenson, you haven't been here very long, but, you know, I'm tempted to take your statement, have a transcript of your statement and play it back to you or give it to my successors to play it back to you at some time in your career and see how comfortable you are with it. But, you know, I think a 24-hour rule makes an enormous amount of sense when one is coming in with a delete everything amendment that totally changes the direction of the bill, which is the kind of thing that often has been done around here on both sides of the aisle, I might admit. But, you know, I think something that's pretty simple and that people can, and you know, admittedly, you're right, I could be more diligent and I could look at every bill, could read every bill through and through as soon as it's put on the agenda. But my prediction, and it's not because you might be more rules conscious and more rigid than many of your colleagues are, is that you will not want to have that statement. Sometime in your future, if you're around here long enough, you will not want to have that statement played back to you.
Well, before we allow Representative Severson to respond, we do have another member with a question on the amendment, and then I'd like to take a vote on the amendment so we can get a vote on the whole bill here. So we'll give you equal time here, Representative Severson, if you choose.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Conant. I appreciate the process. I think too often, though, if we begin to move askew in some of these issues and it becomes a normal procedure instead of an exception, then we begin to pervert the process. The rules are there for the purpose of getting a good argument down and saying these are the amendments and having everybody look at it beforehand and then say, okay, these are some of the problems. And I think some of the problems we've run into today is the process that we're talking about with Ms. Holding and some of these other areas that need to be looked into. However, we don't have them. They are not aware of this, and we haven't looked into them, so it puts a potential bad legislation up for grabs here. And so my objection is only that we have a process, and it behooves us to stick to the process as much as possible.
Okay, no, Representative Demmer, you have a comment, and then we have one more question.
My last comment, Madam Chair, again, referring back to Representative Kahn's comments. I think nobody has said this is an insignificant change, and I think quite to the contrary, the reason that we are only doing one and not doing all or none is because we're let the department doing their work. This is a process. It's a continuum of work. And I think to say we're going to lay this over, we're going to take this out until they get it done, this has to comply with law. And that means we have to try to rush the department in terms of looking at these other areas with their benefits. And we don't want to rush them like some would want us to do to get this done. So I think we need to do what the department's already done, what we know has to be done, and then as they go through a deliberative process dealing with these very important issues, we can come back and make the adjustments as they're necessary.
Let's get this question in first, and I'll let you have a word here before we vote. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mine is just a point of order. I'd just like some clarification of exactly what the amendment is here.
Mr. Shepard.
Madam Chair and Representative Liebling and members, Representative Kahn's amendment would delete Section 4 from the bill in its entirety. So all of the section that's listed there would remain exactly as it is in current law if it were taken out of the bill.
Could you give the line numbers, please?
Representative Liebling.
Madam Chair, Representative Liebling, it would be page 3, line 28 through page 4, line 17 would be. This language would not be stricken from statute. It would just be taken out of the bill, so it would remain in law unchanged.
Mr. Shepard, so that would basically relate to page 4, line 5, then? To reinstate that language. Okay, Representative Kahn, we're going to let you have an amendment or a moment here, and then we're going to vote.
Okay, last thing is we haven't even gone according to the agreement. The agreement was that this language would stay until one went through the next session and saw if they got a appropriation. And we're not through that session. We're not through enough our appropriating session. So we haven't even followed, not even following the terms of the agreement.
Madam Chair. To that point, Representative Piper.
Well, Madam Chair, I think it was the 03 session that they were zeroed out, and 04 was the session on seeing whether they get money, which they didn't, and now we're in 05. And they were told a year and a half ago they were getting the boot, and it's been worked out that they know that, and they'd be here if they didn't know that. And I think we need to just vote this down and move on. I understand Representative Kahn has a passion for this group, but getting rid of a government program around this place is impossible. And they're zeroed out. They're zeroed out in 03. I don't know if they would be under my jurisdiction or Gunther's, but, you know, folks, they're gone. And they're not on the state payroll, and they shouldn't be in the state insurance plan anymore. Let's just admit reality and get them out of there.
Okay, let's vote. All in favor of the Kahn amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion does not prevail, and amendment is not adopted. Let's move on. Representative Demmer, to your bill.
Madam Chair, members, we're just taking questions.
Anybody? Representative Mahoney.
I'll get the union.
Representative Demmer, page 1 of your bill, line 24 and 25, actually section 1, allows for unclassified employees to be hired. Do you have an idea of how many unclassified employees are going to be hired?
Representative Dimmer.
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, I did ask the question to the legal department when I had this bill. I said, are you looking at hiring more? It's not their intent to be adding people. But I'll let the department speak to that.
We're hearing from you for the first time, so you need to identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Ann Schluter. I'm Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Employee Relations. This provision does not expand the ability to make appointments. It merely allows those appointments to report to an assistant commissioner rather than to a deputy or the commissioner. It's a management tool. There is no limitations on how many they can appoint. Presently, we have 125 appointees under that subdivision, and we have 30,000 state employees, 50,000 if you count minuscule. Minuscule number. These appointments are very, very limited in the type of position that those people can hold. The language that limits this, we are not touching. The only change that we want to make in regard to the appointment process under 1A is the fact that they could report to an assistant commissioner. There are some agencies who do not have deputies. And so this is just a management tool at this point.
Follow up, Representative Mahoney.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. But, you know, to say that this is just a management tool or has, I don't know, I can't even remember exactly how you phrased it, but you're adding language, you're adding, you know, the tourism and the IRRRB, and then you're adding one more layer of management that they get to report to. Now, the lower on the management chain that you get to report to, the wider the base is. So what you're doing is you're expanding, in one fashion or another, the ability for them to go outside the civil service or just appoint people to or hire unclassified. I guess that's the correct term. And, you know, I just grabbed the statute books when I got here as I was looking at this bill, and I found five different places that authorization is already there. So why are you adding a sixth one, I guess? And that's one question. And the other is, could you address why you're expanding this in terms of putting those two in there? Explore Minnesota Tourism and the Iron Range Resource.
Deputy Commissioner Schluter.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. We are including those two entities because these agencies, first of all, the tourism agency had this authority before they became an independent agency from the Department of Economic Security. Department of the old DEED now, but it was Department of Economic Development. We are adding the tourism because they did have that ability. We're also adding IRRR because they are now elevated to a cabinet level. If you look at these appointments under 1A, these appointments are there in order to give the administration and the policymakers of the agencies some ability to move their policy agenda. And as you see in the current statute, where it says that number five under the requirements for these positions in subdivision 1A, it does state that there will be a need for the person occupying the position to be accountable to, loyal to, and compatible with the governor and the agency head, the employing statutory border commission, or the employing constitutional officer. So that's why these positions are very limited, and it's very prescribed as to what they do, their policy level, their high level. That's the reason they have to report to the commissioner, deputy commissioner, and we are now saying an assistant commissioner, which is a very high level member of the leadership team of the agency. We are not changing any of those requirements.
Follow up, Representative Mahoney.
Well, Madam Chair and Assistant Commissioner, I'm kind of perplexed here because Assistant Agency Head, would that be like your position, or would it be your counterpart at the table? Or I know agencies where an assistant agency head is supervising like two or three people, and you know, in an agency of several hundred. So I guess I'm, you know, you're getting down. A foreman on a job site generally supervises a dozen people. So I'm not sure that he's an assistant head of whatever is this high and mighty management team person. And so how are you relating this assistant deputy head or whatever the heck they are here?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Schluter.
Representative. An assistant commissioner is a classification, and that is a very high-level position. It's just below the deputy commissioner. The three top positions in your agency will be commissioner, deputy commissioner, you do have one, and then assistant commissioner. So they are a high-level members of the leadership team of that agency.
Madam Chair.
Follow-up, Representative Mahoney.
Okay, how many assistant agency heads are in the Department of Health or DEED, as it's now called, or DOER? How many assistant agency heads are there? I mean, per agency. And then give me some of just give me that number if you can.
Deputy Commissioner Schluter.
Madam Chair, Representative. In regard to the deputy commissioners, currently the total count are 22. That is below what it was in 1996, which was 27.
That's across all agencies?
That's across all agencies. Assistant commissioners, we now have 35, and that is up slightly from 1996 where we had, or excuse me, it's down significantly from 1996 when we had 48. And it will vary from agency to agency. For example, DOER has no assistant commissioner at this point. Some, as I say, some agencies have no deputy. That's a management choice for the commissioner as to how the commissioner wants to organize their agency to best meet their policy and service responsibilities.
Follow-up, Representative Mahoney.
This certainly is a, to me it looks like an expansion of management and an unclassified positions in state government and the ability to appoint more. Has any of the employee associations or employee unions been involved in this particular conversation, or is this just a management decision and you left I can't remember all the acronyms, but I suspect unions and the professional associations that are make up our state employees, have they been involved in this conversation?
Deputy Commissioner Schluter.
Madam Chair, Representative, they are aware of this proposal, and they, as I understand it, MAPE does not like this proposal because of their concerns in regard to classified versus unclassified positions. We brought this forward because of the concerns of some of our agencies in regard to managing these positions. And as I said, some of them do not have deputies. It was just an additional tool that they would like to have had. So it's a customer service proposal that we're making for our agencies.
Okay, I have four members on the list here.
I have an amendment that I'd like to offer to this bill. And I'd like to offer it in front of the committee and have the committee administrator. I'd like to offer it in front of the committee and have the committee administrator pass it out.
Okay. And let's get that going then. And there's four members with questions here, and I think on this line, Representative Loeffler, does it relate to what we're talking about right now?
Yes,
sir. Or the bill? Okay, Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and. And Schluter, you had indicated, I thought in your original explanation, that the addition of the assistants was for agencies that didn't have a deputy commissioner, but as the discussion continues, it appears that the intent is to expand this to all assistant commissioners. Is that correct?
Madam Chair.
Deputy Commissioner Schluter.
Representative. Yes, it is both. For those agencies that do not have deputies, it allows them to have another management tool. And for agencies who have assistant commissioners, it also gives them an additional management tool.
Follow up, Representative Loeffler.
Well, Madam Chair, this is a great concern to me. And while I'm new to the legislature, I'm not new to state government in terms of seeing how it's evolved over time. And I think we really have drifted into a situation in which we have less nonpartisan, good professional staff leading our agencies and guiding the implementation of the policies of whatever administration serves than we used to. I started in state government back in the mid-70s when, quite honestly, most commissioners served across both Republican and Democratic governors. And they were seen as good, objective professionals who carried out whatever the orders were of the policy leaders they reported to. We have switched to a situation in which the commissioners became appointed, and then it just continues to go down the situation. And your goal of seeing, as you said, that this is to give the administration more ability to move their policy agenda, quite honestly, is thwarted by that. Because most of the people who work in these state agencies are good, honest professionals who want to make sure that good things happen and are very knowledgeable, very expert in the areas in which they work. And oftentimes they find themselves working with newcomers who come in from the outside, some of whom have really good and wonderful backgrounds and in that area, and some of whom have very limited or very narrow background that may be in one tiny area of an agency is in charge of and have very limited experience in the others. And it's very difficult sometimes for the professional staff there to have to sort of orient and train these people, and it sometimes actually makes the policy process more difficult for everyone involved. And so I think that the move towards having assistant commissioners now have more unclassified staff not only limits the opportunities for good people who have been working within the system to move up and assume more responsibility, and that will limit our ability to recruit and retain state employees at a high level, but it also means, I think, that there's, you know, less opportunity for us to feel like we have that nice senior cadre of state employees who are like our House Research Department, who serve the public, who serve the good of good policy, who don't take a stance politically one way or another, but really do try and bring objective, good, credible, professional expertise to the work we do. And I think that we ought to encourage that within our state agencies rather than encouraging the growth of a constantly changing senior workforce at a greater and greater level every 4 years. I don't think that serves the citizens well, and so I will be working against expanding the unclassified service to this level.
Representative Dimmer.
I'll defer to Deputy Commissioner.
Deputy Commissioner Schluter.
Madam Chair, Representative. I appreciate your remarks. One thing I wanted to clarify is that currently there's absolutely no limit on the appointments that can be made. So to equate this absolutely with there are going to be more appointments is a very broad assumption, because right now they could appoint whomever they desire as long as they meet the limitations within the statute in regard to those positions.
Okay, I have several people on the list. Let's get through the list here, and then we'll get to Representative Mahoney's amendment. Representative Sheldon Johnson, I think you've been on the list about a half hour now. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you, Chair. I think most of my questions have been answered, but I was curious as the last thing that you said, Ms. or Commissioner Schluter. You have the capacity to appoint now. Then what's the point of the bill to increase unclassified if you can already do it?
Deputy Commissioner Schluter.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's my point. We are not increasing the number. What we're doing is allowing those appointees to report to somebody else, and that is an assistant commissioner. Right now, the law, as I said, is very prescriptive in regard to these appointments, and they say that these appointments must report to the commissioner or to the deputy commissioner, because they are part of the leadership team. They are high-level policy people. And what we're requesting is that we also include assistant commissioners, which is a classification for high-level leadership within agencies. That's what we're asking for.
Representative Zimmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, members, I think we have to be clear. Don't let the rhetoric dissuade you as far as what we're trying to do here. We're not trying to hire more unclassified. All we're doing is taking and adding management. We're taking 35 people and making them available to the unclassified so that they can report. 35 people is what we're doing. That's the number of assistant commissioners throughout the state government. So we're giving 35 people the authority to be reported to by unclassified. That's really all we're doing. So, and I think in terms of trying to improve service to our constituents out there, I think this would enhance that, because now you have other people who can make decisions without, you know, we're expanding people that can make decisions. We're not expanding the number of people or trying to do away with anything.
Right, Representative McNamara, you've been on the list for a while. Let's have your question there. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm trying to put this into perspective in regards to how it fits with everything and how my experience in the private sector fits with it. Representative Demmer or Deputy Commissioner, do either one of you have the numbers? What percentage of our employees today are in this upper top that are unclassified? Do you have a number for that?
Deputy Commissioner Schluter.
Chairman, Representative, yes, 0.5%, I think.
Okay, so...
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Deputy Commissioner, if I could follow up a little more on that, then. So to put that into the perspective of a private firm, it would be a half a person in 100 or five people in 1,000 are unclassified. Okay, thank you. Then I also want to put just my own personal perspective on it, having been in a family where my father rose up in the ranks of the Department of Transportation and moved on to be one of these. Very much, you can be a member of Ask Me, you can be a member of me, and become an assistant commissioner and report under two different administrations, one Democrat, one Republican, and they very much reward a dedicated employee for being there. I'm aware of that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Beard, you've been on the list for almost an hour. I think you came and went a couple times. Would you still like to take up your question?
No,
if you remember what it was.
Madam Chair, my question is a very innocuous and innocent question about Subdivision 6 that we'll take up at another time.
Okay.
I don't want to get in the way of this discussion.
And so that brings us back to Representative Mahoney with your amendment, the A2 amendment. Representative Mahoney moves the A2 amendment. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as for many of the things already stated, and as the commissioner just said, that they're not changing anything, so they're not. So I'm not sure why this particular section is in here. This amendment deletes section one, or page one, from line 8 through page 2, line 22. And it takes out this reference to the tourism, which I'm not sure gets any money from the state, so we might be seeing them on insurance issues again. The Iron Range Resource and Rehabilitation Committee agency, and the reporting to of the assistant agency heads. And again, I'm not sure why you want a unclassified assistant agency head reporting to a classified person. I mean, I'm not sure if we're having the management team report to somebody else. So anyhow, this amendment deletes that section and allows the state to continue on with what it's been doing for a while.
Representative Demmer.
Madam Chair, again, I'll speak against the amendment. Representative Mahoney doesn't quite understand what we're trying to do, so I think trying to take out what he doesn't understand is probably not a good idea.
Well, actually, Madam Chair, I do understand what we're trying to do.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Further questions to the A2 amendment? Representative Severson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I was put, because my experience was always in the military, I kind of put it in the perspective, and let me not understand if I'm understanding this correctly. Typically, in a squadron unit, you've got a commanding officer, you've got the executive officer, and you've got department heads. And the department heads kind of look over the departments, and what we're seeing here is those department heads currently report directly to the commanding officer, and what we are trying to do here is say, let them go to the executive officer so that he can
take some of the pressure off of the commanding officer. Is that kind of the way we're reading this?
Representative Demmer, you need to say something instead of just nodding.
Oh, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I was just giving encouragement, Madam Chair. But I think that's exactly right, Representative Severson. You hit it right on. We're taking, and we got, you know, there are 30,000 people that, and not including the MinSkew folks, there are 30,000 people that are being managed, and we're taking and saying that there are 35 more that now we'll be able to take questions and spread that load out. So you're right.
And then just to... Thank you, Madam Chair. And then just to kind of a follow-on, and the Explore Tourism, Minnesota Tourism is a new entity, and this kind of puts them into the constructs with all the rest of the entities. Is that correct?
Deputy Commissioner Schluter.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, that's correct.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think I understand this, and I think I Representative Mahoney's bill would kind of try and block any progress that we're trying to make here, so I would vote against that amendment. Thank you.
I'd like to get a vote here soon so we can get out of here. Quickly, Representative Kahn.
Well, Madam Chairman, I don't want to paraphrase Representative Leffler or Representative Mahoney, but you are increasing the number of possibly partisan people who only have political loyalties at the expense of people who are nonpartisan. Now, if that's the way you want to run state government, go ahead and vote against the Mahoney amendment. It's just the question is, do we want to expand the abilities to put partisan people in government, or do we want to not expand them? And that's the question that's before. And I said it was already been talked about carefully by both Mahoney and Leff. So, you know, that's your choice.
Let Representative Demmer go first here, and we have a couple other folks. Representative Demmer.
Madam Chair, again, Representative Kahn is trying to characterize it in an unfair fashion. We are not increasing the partisanism. These assistant commissioners are already appointed. We're not changing that. All we're doing is saying that they have a little more, that there's some more people that can report to them. That's all we're doing.
Yes, and the people,
follow up, Representative Kahn.
And the people that report to them are also not classified. There's a reason for the classified civil service position.
That's right.
When you expand it, and when you expand the non-classified position, and let me never be said that I'm saying something not in favor of partisan politics. I like partisan politics, but we've decided that state government ought to have a certain level of people who come through a civil service classification process, and this does reverse that threat. This does expand the direction away from that, and that's what it does, whether you want to say so or not.
Representative McMurray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to confirm, Deputy Commissioner, did you say under this administration we have less of these unclassified positions today than we had in the previous one or two administrations?
Commissioner Schluter.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes.
Okay, and I also want to go on record again, Representative Kahn, that I definitely know that you can come from a classified position to be unclassified. You know, that definitely you can rise up through the ranks, and this administration has shrunk the number of people in these positions, not expanded it.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Demmer or either of our guests, my question is just, you spoke about why Explore Minnesota Tourism is in here, and I can understand that. Could you, just since I don't have a lot of background with this, could you just explain to me why the Iron Range Resources and Rehab Board is put in now, too?
Deputy Commissioner Schluter.
Madam Chair, Representative, they are a cabinet-level agency, and we are bringing them up to the level of the same rights and responsibilities as of the other cabinet-level agencies.
Okay, I believe Representative Mahoney.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and you know, and I'll kind of finish this particular conversation. And Representative Kahn really did put it into a good nutshell there that we are expanding partisan politics, and I do know that you can move up. Some of what my colleague across the table here is talking about, maybe in the past a little bit, it's a little bit more difficult now. But in response to the comment about having less now than we had before, the number that you're citing before, is that before budget cuts, and then the number that you're citing now. We're not going to raise this. We've got a much lower, I think you said 46 in one case, down to 33. Is that number there because of, or there after the budget cuts that went through, where we reduced government 5, 10, 15, 20%, depending on who you ask?
Deputy Commissioner Schluter.
Madam Chair, Representative, I cannot speak to the why these appointments are different. I just have the numbers that they are. They're significantly different from 1996 to present.
And that's been, Madam Chair, I suspect many of
administrations,
these,
right.
I suspect many of these are prior are based on budget cuts as opposed to trying to reduce government. Well, I shouldn't put it that way. But anyhow, this is an amendment that tries to keep government working in the good fashion that Minnesota's used to, and I hope for your support.
Yeah, we'll let Representative Demmer have a final word here on the bill before we take a vote on the Mahoney Amendment. Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Again, not to overstate what I've said a number of times, what we're doing is expanding some management capability for 35 people in managing 30,000 people. We're not adding positions. We're not adding unclassified. We're not taking away unclassified. So I support and voting down the amendment.
Okay, I think we're fully informed, ready to vote.
One explanation.
Very quickly, Representative Kahn.
How can you say you're not expanding the number of unclassified positions when you're giving me another ability to appoint an unclassified position? Just explain the linguistics of this, not the numbers.
Representative Demmer.
Madam Chair, Representative Kahn, assistant commissioners are already appointed as unclassified.
Yes.
We're not adding those.
No.
All we're doing is taking existing unclassified folks and saying you can now report to these people. That's all we're doing.
Okay, let's vote. All in favor of the A2 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. Amendment is not adopted. Representative Demmer, to your bill.
That's right.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We remain here for questions.
I don't know what the word is now.
Well, Madam Chair.
What's the mark with all?
Representative Beard, did you?
Yes, I can ask my question. Representative Demmer, on page 4, subdivision checklist. I'm assuming that the email notification we'll get for the open enrollment and so on and so forth will be similar to first-class letters now, because there is, if I understand correctly, there is just a first-class letter notified or a slip put in an employee's mailbox, something to that effect. There's nothing certified or to be signed for in this whole maneuver now that email will do away with. Is there, in other words, electronic delivery is going to be as secure and as notified, as traceable in the existing system?
Who's responding here?
Madam Chair, Representative Beard. I'll let the Deputy Commissioner or
Ms. Holding.
Or Ms. Holding. Please.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Beard, we do intend to notify people, even if it's by way of a postcard, because we're unable right now to determine who has electronic access and who doesn't. So everybody, at least for the time being, will get something. But we're moving in this direction, and we'd like to have this language to help us codify where we're going.
Madam Chair, I guess Ms. Holley, what I'm looking for is that we're not going backwards in notification, but if anything, we're over-notifying. It's like the confidence that that's what we're doing here.
Madam Chair, Representative Beard, yes, we are not going backwards. In fact, we'll be doing more because we'll be sending something in the mail plus the electronic notification.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Demmer, I have a different concern or question about this on page 3, on the section starting on line 20. The appointing, when practicable, the appointing authority may search the employment database for qualified applicants, or when necessary, the commissioner may authorize the appointment of any person deemed qualified by the appointing authority. I guess I'd like a little more explanation of that. In particular, I want to focus on the when necessary. It just seems to me that maybe it's just kind of opening this up to, you know, kind of standardless
you know, whenever we can hire anybody we choose, and maybe that's, I'm sure that's not the intent, but I'd like to hear a little bit more about that and what this when necessary might mean.
Deputy Commissioner Schluter.
Madam Chair, Representative, this is specific to temporary appointments. Those are very short-term appointments. And these are made routinely by agencies who have an urgent need for a very short time for an employee. Right, we used to talk about eligible lists, but when we went to our new system and last year and changed that statute, we no longer have lists. But what we are trying to rectify here is to get the eligible list language out of there and talk about looking at our database, which we do for all employees when we're applicants, when we are looking for employment. We go to our database now, and we look through there at those people who have the qualifications as specified by the agency for those positions. So that's what we're changing here. And we're not changing any of the other language other than that to say you can look in the database. We want you to look in the database for these appointments and gives them the authority to do so rather than generating a list, which we don't have anymore. That's what that's about. And the language that you alluded to in regard to the commissioner, it says that the commissioner may authorize the appointment of any person deemed qualified by the appointing authority, and that's current language.
Representative Liebling.
I guess the thank you. The question, though, is, you know, what about the when necessary? Just is that just when you don't have anybody who's in your database? Is that what you're referring to there?
Deputy Commissioner Schluter.
Madam Chair, Representative. Where? What? Can you tell? Can you give me the line?
Line 21 and going to 22.
Oh, all right. That's right. When the database recall, or when necessary. In other words, you can't find anybody for a temporary appointment. Does that answer your question, Representative?
Thank you. Well. Follow-up, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It does, but I guess it leaves me with a little bit of a question that, you know, it doesn't say what you're saying. So I guess I would like that to be clarified a little bit. I mean, you could say, or when there is no employee in the database who, or no one in the database who would appear to meet those qualifications, that then going on to the rest of it.
Representative Demmer.
Madam Chair, Representative Liebling, I think, again, I think maybe reading more into this than what's there, some of the things you referred to about authorization to appoint somebody deemed qualified, that's what the current language is. We're not changing that. All we're doing is saying there is no eligible list anymore. They don't use that. They now have the electronic ability to scan the entire list of qualified applicants, and it's just saying, number one, they can use that the entire database rather than some list that doesn't exist anymore, and number two, it's saying that if necessary, if they can search the database, and when necessary, they can hire somebody outside just like they can before.
Deputy Commissioner Schluter.
Madam Chair, Representative, the appointment of a temporary, they can appoint anybody to a temporary position if they want to right now. That's the language. And so what this just says, that if they search the database and they can't find anybody in the database, and they don't have anybody in mind that fills the job, but they find somebody then that has those qualifications, the commissioner can certify that that person is qualified for the job. And that's what when necessary means.
Okay, we're running out of committee time here. Representative Demmer, I'll give you the final word before we vote on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've appreciated the conversation. It's been good. I think it's good that we do discuss these things, and I do appreciate that. So with that, I would renew my motion to pass House File 973, to be recommended to pass, and be put on the general budget register.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails, and the bill is passed to the general register. Thank you, Representative Demmer. With that, member, meeting is adjourned.